This is the Overclocked Podcast, a weekly dose of video game music and conversation from ocremix.org.
This week, we delve into Lyndon Holland's adaptive soundtrack to Virginia, examine the themes of Super Mario 64 with our latest installment of The Big Ones, and get a little punchy with this week's playlist.
Oh, sorry. Hey, Brian, I didn't see you there.
What?
I was just blowing all the dust off of our studio equipment since we haven't been in here for several ages.
Oh, I get the bit you're doing. That's super funny.
It's a skit.
I get it. Can I do it too now?
Yeah.
Okay, I think we got all the dust.
Okay, good. Well, we can start the intro then. Hey, everyone, welcome to our show. This is After about a two-week break, which is mostly unplanned, I'll
readily
admit.
It may be the 41st episode, but it's like the 72nd week.
Yeah, something like that. I'm Steven, by the way, and this is my brother and co-host, Brian.
They were in danger of forgetting at this point. Yes, I am Brian.
quite indeed. And we're back, and luckily, you know what the good thing about skipping a couple of weeks is?
What's that?
You got a lot of material for the week you start again.
We do. We're going to have a crazy giant remix rewind this week because, well, it turns out just because we stopped, Overclocked Remix did not.
It was an upsetting revelation, let me tell you.
I know. It was pretty sad. Other cool things that have happened, I got a new microphone.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yes, I did. So now you can hear my voice in high definition. You can hear my 4K voice.
But also, I did something exciting the other day.
What's that, Steven?
I played a video game.
Whoa, I never do that.
Yeah, the last video game I played was what's it called?
Space Wars?
Overwatch. Overwatch. You remember me talking about that a while ago.
I do remember that.
Haven't really played, let alone bought a game since then. But I tried out Virginia, and then the very next day I talked to Lyndon Holland, who composed it, and it was a very interesting discussion.
Well, that sounds neat. But first, let's jump into this week's Remix Rewind.
BKM reminds us how hardcore ponies are in his Pony Island remix, Diabolus Ex Machina. Unrelenting metal guitar is well suited to this game, and BKM does a great job in fleshing out the pure, unapologetic malice latent in the source material, and, indeed, in all of pony kind. So pull up the hoods of your robes and prepare the ritual apples, kids. The ponies are coming.
For your soul.
Remixer Fassi's debut track, Misty Night, spins music from Sonic Colors into a smooth EDM jam that keeps a pleasing balance of mellow and energetic without straying too far into either. This one feels like a fun run at sunset through friendly terrain. Lots of rings to collect, ramps and springs to launch from, but no spikes to avoid, and no robots to fight.
Another newcomer remixer, Mahilis, or possibly Majelis, depending on if you want to pronounce that J, isn't here to mess around. From the ominous intro to the strident synth chords, their Advance Wars track, Unworldly Invasion, brings a war to your door. Through fire and smoke, you hear the thumping drone of helicopter blades. Here to drop the bombs of bass and blow us into pixels. Hoo-ah!
And Mono is yet the third new remixer to offer up a track this week. Those Who Seek the End is a Final Fantasy X remix that carefully builds its rock elements and reverent progression. It's atmospheric, but never becomes background, like a field of stars that subtly fills the sky as the twilight fades to night.
Thank you. The parade of Remix for Newcomers continues as first-timer Nocbient takes us to Yoshi's Island with a chill, relaxing EDM tune called A Long Way Home. The attention to detail is simply amazing, and the track stands out for its ability to take familiar elements and a familiar song and change it so much with so little corruption while making all of that look easy. Our next fresh face is Sentient Pulse, whose debut submission, The Torment of a Twilight, seems to do the impossible, adding dubstep to one of Twilight Princess's most iconic melodies without obliterating it. The result tells the far future story of the planet Hyrule, its defender Space Captain Link, and the arrival of a mysterious princess from the darkness between the stars, who may have the power to save them all from the evil space pirate Ganon. Masterminds the latest overclocked university project, Island Hospitality, a Star Tropics remix whose sunny electric energy sings of sandy beaches on a warm weekend, surrounded by friends. While nostalgia-inducingly true to the origins, the modern club rhythms and synth give the source tracks the facelift they have long deserved.
If Sign of Evil from the original Doom were a crocodile, still menacing and full of potential danger, then Bobby Prince's remix, Army Worthy of Phobos, is a dragon, filling the room with imminent deadly force. The presence conjured by this track walks in like it knows there's nothing anyone can do to stop it, then lingers with delicate chimes and legato tones just long enough to get us to lower our guard for the powerful ending.
Augustin's Turkish Coffee is a remix from Spelunky that answers the age-old question. If a piano and a violin were both trained in fencing, which would win at chess? Disjointed yet shockingly cohesive, this track makes up its own games, then plays them with expert ease. The instruments sometimes duel, sometimes dance, always returning to each other in unexpected ways.
Jive Master and Sir Nuts team up to tackle a track from Double Dragon 2 in their new synth-pop remix, Tag Team. in an explosion of neon and chrome, this 80s retro riot shows some Conan-class muscle with a shameless, sharp bravado. Added elements seem like natural extensions of the source, and the top-notch mixing adds a fine shine.
Earthbound gave us one of gaming's weirdest soundtracks, wandering lawless through phrase, rhythm, and meter in the proud tradition of nothing ever. Unafraid, remixer Nelward seeks to relive the chaos with his track Battle Against a Malignant and Repugnant Opponent. The use of modern tools only brings the madness into focus, getting us one step closer to a world of dreams and nightmares. Remixes and more, head over to ocremix.org. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the InTune interview, where we talk to people who make music about the music that they make. I'm your usual host, Steven. As usual, my co-host Brian is not here for the interview. He got lost again, this time ironically, I'm guessing it was somewhere in Virginia. And today I've got a composer that we've never talked to before on the show, Lyndon Holland. Hey, Lyndon, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to meet you. We'll speak to you. Oh.
likewise, for sure. I don't know if you listeners already know his name or not, but you might have heard of the game Virginia, which came out somewhat recently, actually.
I got into music, writing for music for games back maybe like 2001 when I was, as a child, probably age sort of 13, I was quite interested in, there's a piece of software called RPG Maker 2000, which was around at the time.
Yes.
Yeah, and I was really into Final Fantasy games at that point, still am. I wanted to make my own RPG game, and I realized I was no good at that, and I was, at the time I was playing guitar, and I realized that there's people in this community that I was like a gaming forum that I was a part of, that people were making MIDI music, And so then that's how I got into that. So I then started to dabble my hand, I suppose, at making music using my computer. And then that just escalated. When I started speaking to some other composers, they sort of pointed me in the direction of film music. And I got really into film music. And then I decided to do a degree in music. And so this is skipping ahead a few years now. And at this point, I was much more into the idea of writing music for film. And then I went to a film school to do a master's degree. And this is now in about 2012. And it was a two-year master's degree, which enabled me to work on lots of different short films, documentaries, and things like this. And I basically, if a film school was called the National Film and Television School, which they put out a lot of really high quality short films that usually do well in film festivals. And so it was kind of it's an education really in learning how to write music for narrative. But how I got into video games again after that was that at this film school, in the first year I was there, they put on a games course, and I sort of got the bug for writing music for video games, because the first game that I was working on when I was there, they were really up for playing around with interactive, adaptive music. And that's something which, you know, we made great use of in Virginia. So I definitely think that that was a really important bit of education I had.
You can sort of look at all of the pieces and put them together. Looking back from Virginia, you say you started with games, then moved into short film, and then learned about adaptive music. Like, that just explains the entire Virginia soundtrack.
Yeah, and you know, it was really quite spooky how as soon as I graduated from the film school, I saw, and at this time I was massively into, I was rewatching the Twin Peaks, and at university I'd rewatched an entire season of X-Files, and I saw an ad that was asking for, on an indie game forum, asking for a composer to come on board to work on this project, which is, which would be, end up being Virginia. But it seemed almost too perfectly tailored to what I wanted to do, which is quite spooky. And then we ended up working together, so that was...
That's a nice plot twist.
Yeah.
So did you know early on what you wanted it to sound like, or was there a lot of like conversation and changes about that?
At first, I wanted it to be something that was incredibly retro and nostalgic. I mean, retro for making it sound like it was something out of the 90s. And actually, I think... something like the score to Stranger Things, I was kind of thinking, and maybe I'd do something like that, you know, something that's very like 90s or maybe even 80s. Then at a certain point, I think the opportunity was available for us to perhaps record with a live orchestra. And I just, after I was watching a bunch of 90s movies, and I realized that there was a particular style of film music back in the 90s, at least for the sort of early 90s films, like there was one called Outbreak, which had this sort of style to it, and things like True Lies, where they have a bass which is orchestral and quite traditional, but then there's a very particular type of synth which is very contemporary to the 90s. And I thought that'd be quite a nice way in to sort of define the 90s by having a mixture of the two things. Synthesizers are great, but I think that when you can use live musicians, you're always going to get something more emotional from the performer who's going to be playing it. So I thought that that would be a shame to miss that opportunity.
How did you guys end up, you know, making this thing that the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra scored in the first place?
So when I came on board, so after responding to this indie forum ad, Terry Kenny and Jonathan Burrows, who are the creative directors on Virginia at Variable State, they had a pretty clear idea what they wanted the game to be, in that they had played a game by Blender Games called 30 Flights of Living, which is, I suppose, it was one of the first games, or maybe the first game, I think, probably, to use cinematic cutting to tell the narrative, and basically cutting out lots of story beats and filling in the blanks. We wanted to make a feature-length version of this. Whilst the music in 30 Flights 11 is quite something like a Tarantino movie in a way, we wanted to do the the Silence of the Lambs version of that. So something which was scored in a way that sort of traditional film scoring would work.
Yeah, I mean, the camera cuts combined with the overall length of it, I feel, you know, it sort of feels like you're sitting down for a special edition of a movie.
Yeah, no, that's that. I mean, there's no mistake why we sort of say play feature, and we have like a DVD style menu thing.
Yeah.
We sort of didn't want to shy away. We wanted to be really upfront about that we were sort of making interactive cinemas. At least that was what we kind of thought we were doing, and that we didn't want people to think that it was going to be sort of like an L.A. Noir experience. We wanted people to know that it was low interactive in terms of sort of gameplay mechanics, but actually it's hopefully quite story rich.
But even just the slightest amount of interaction can throw off a movie score, right? Like, let's say you're in the scene and you need to open a cabinet, and when you open that cabinet, something significant happens.
Yeah.
In a movie, that happens in a linear fashion. That's that. The music swells when you open the cabinet. In this game, I could just sit there and stare at the cabinet for 10 minutes. As a composer, how did you handle that?
Yeah, that was certainly the most challenging thing about writing the music for this game, because there wasn't really anything that I could draw from. When I'm looking at games, I can see that they're probably using the same sort of techniques that I'd used, but there wasn't really any documentation on really any of this, and I didn't really know anyone who did this, so I couldn't really ask anyone. We want it to be really important that the music will sync up with some of these cuts, some of these interactions, because that's how the meaningful moments in film music work, where you have synchronicity in these moments. And I thought it'd be so cool if we could achieve that in a video game. We use a piece of software called FMod, which is a sort of third-party audio software, which allows you to do stuff like beat match music. So you can create a piece of music, put it in the software. If you know the tempo, say it's 120 BPM, you can then see where the bar lines for each of these, where each bar line is, and you can say only transition when you get to the next musical appropriate moment, which might be at the end of a bar. So we just wait until you get to that bar and then you transition. So often there'll be a time where the music is waiting around to get to that point. And the trick was, how flexible can we make that? How long can we make the player wait?
Right.
In its perfect instance, it would transition instantly. And there are examples of this. So if we just have a sort of free-form piece of music, which is like a bed or pad, and it doesn't really have many rhythmic aspects to it, elements to it, then we can quite comfortably transition out of that and sort of crossfade into a new piece without really it sounding weird. But if there's like a rhythm to it, you can't, you know, and especially if it's going to transition to a new piece which has a rhythm as well, then it has to be in sync with the beat.
Yeah, like if the rhythm is going 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, and then something activates on 1-2, you have to wait to the 3-4 until you can get to the next one. Is that kind of a case?
Basically, yeah. I mean, sometimes you can get away with sort of being on the beat or on every second beat. But that would often dictate the style of music that you could write. So you'd have to think about these things before you sat down and started writing. So I'd think, well, I know there's going to be an interaction here, and I know that this interaction, there's not really much leeway. Like, for instance, sometimes you can just have a bit of a pause at the end of an animation before the cut happens, or you can delay the animation happening by like within a region of like a second before it starts becoming noticeable. But if I know that, for instance, in the Roadhouse bar, we have a piece of music which has a chord progression to it, which is maybe about 16 bars long. The problem with that is that transitioning to the transition point, which I want to change to, would mean that I'd have to write four different outros in order to connect to to the harmony. And I tried that, and it worked technically, but it just sounded really weird and odd. That it didn't sound like a moment that in a, because that piece of music is supposed to be a song, it didn't sound like a moment that you would naturally transition to the chorus. And so what we had to do is just accept that you're going to have to wait until you get to the beginning of that sort of long phrase, like long chord progression. We realised we could probably get away with that because you're sat down, you have a band playing, and we can change things in the lighting, and it sort of, it would be enough and enough sort of entertainment on screen that it wouldn't feel like, what's going on here? Why am I just sitting here? Whereas different parts of a game, you definitely can't do that. And so often, like, the music would have to be all one chord, or, you know, a pedal note that, and actually I find that underscore music works best in that way anyway, that if there's too much development in the harmony progression, it starts to take a life on its own. I think it, I sort of usually describe it as being like it starts to form its own narrative. It starts to disconnect from the picture a little bit, and sometimes that's, you want that, you want it to, the music to sit on top. For instance, there's a sequence later in on later on in the game where there's this sort of flash forward where you're seeing a bunch of events unfold of you rising up the ranks in your career, and the music there has, again, like a chord progression which you wouldn't really easily be able to split into, but it didn't matter in that instance because we're going to hear the whole thing out. That definitely gives the feeling of not underscore, rather, I think anyway, sitting on top as being sort of reflective, and so it has this sort of like a past tense nature to, I think. Whereas, I don't know if it sounds really pretentious, but when things are sort of just hanging around a bit more, like sitting on one chord, then it feels like there's much more room for the music to meander and kind of develop in a way which kind of sits in with the present time.
Because a lot of this music is timing based, it seems like it would be a lot easier to make a MIDI based soundtrack that was not performed live.
Yeah.
Because it'd be easier to cut and change and swap out. How did you factor in having an orchestra?
If it was just like a purely like synth score, or, you know, fake orchestra, like virtual instruments.
Right.
as I guess it made the recording process a lot more different than what a normal film score would be. So
yes,
to go more deeper into some of this adaptive music and actually how it works is that you bounce out, or at least this is what I do, I bounce out small sections of the piece in different layers. So I might just bounce out for a whole sort of 2 minute long track. I might just bounce out every single bar individually for a certain layer of music. And I do that because if it can transition at any bar, then you want to have the tail of the previous line. You want it to kind of die down. And if it is just to cut directly, you just get a jarring sort of like a stop in the audio. And so it's this frustrating thing, but it just needs to be that we just have to bounce out every single bar so that it just connects seamlessly. So what it means when recording that live was that we just had to record, and this wasn't the case for every cue, but mm-hmm. there was instances where the orchestra would just play for a bar and then they'd do another bar.
And would you also have to have them record alternate versions, or was that something you were able to avoid?
There was a little bit of that, but I tried to avoid that where I could, because we basically didn't have like that much time with the orchestra. We had 2 days. In fact, only a day and a half. And I was kind of, I mean, that was just a guess whether we could get that done in time, because I was just like, well, that sounds about right. I've done some live recording before, and it's sort of, I've done short films where I have 3 hours to do about 20 minutes of music. So I sort of worked out, well, if we have about 12 hours, we could probably do about an hour. And that's sort of around about the amount of music we needed to record. It fortunately worked out perfectly, and I didn't need any extra time, and I didn't have too much time. But yeah, that was just a guess, to be honest.
It seems like one of those mornings when you wake up and you're like, I got to be there on time today, right?
Yeah. Because I still have the original versions, which was before the orchestra, and now I just can't even bear to listen to them.
Oh yeah.
I will never reveal them.
They'll remain in the secret closet.
Yeah.
Or perhaps they'll remain in a box locked by a key, and it will be burned during a dream sequence.
That would be something, wouldn't it?
So if anyone hasn't played the game yet and they're going to for the first time, and this is one of those games that I feel like needs to be replayed multiple times if you really want to figure out what's going on, because there's a ton of symbolism, and the game is intentionally built, from my perspective, to make you think about everything that happens, right? It's not going to spell it out for you. So is there anything you think that people should be looking for or listening for, or is it best to just go in blind?
I would say go in blind, and I would say just to trust us that there may be a point that you get to where you feel like nothing makes sense and that it's all random and we don't know what we're doing. But I assure you there is an intent behind these moments, and keep that in mind perhaps. But otherwise, you know, I kind of just like the idea that we can just give this thing, put it into the public's hands, and they can just, you know, people can just play it and can have whatever experience they want from it. And that we've made a pact, actually, because I co-wrote the game as well, that we wouldn't sort of divulge any interpretations, or, you know, we wouldn't explain anything what we thought the game would be about, because we want that to either remain a mystery or for people to kind of, you know, have their own interpretations.
Well, there goes my next 17 questions for the interview. I guess we're done today, folks.
Well, feel free to answer. Maybe I'll answer in a cryptic way.
Well, no, it's actually, I don't want to ask too many of those questions just by my curiosity, because I feel like people should try to figure it out for themselves. Right when I finished the game, I sat down for, you know, 5 minutes straight, tried to sort through all my thoughts. Then I went online and tried to figure out what other people had deduced. And everything was different.
Yeah.
Like my ideas were completely different than theirs. I've never been particularly good with symbolism, so maybe that's my fault. But yeah, it does remind me a lot of Dear Esther, which is another game with a great soundtrack where everyone's going to come away with something a little different.
Yeah, brilliant soundtrack in that game.
But anyway, Lyndon, thanks a lot for sparing some time to talk. It was super fascinating to be able to play this game last night and then talk to the composer/co-writer the very next day.
Cool. Well, yeah, thank you very much for having me on the show. Hopefully what I said made some sense. I've never had to explain any of this before, so I don't know whether it makes any sense to other
people. It's tough to explain, but it made perfect sense to me. So, yeah, I definitely appreciated it. So is there anything up next in the pipeline or projects that you're working on in the future that you can talk about?
Yeah, there's a few things I can't talk about, but I am working at the moment on a 3D platformer game, doing the music for this game called Poi, P-O-I, which is by a studio called Polykid. And that game is actually out on early access, so you can actually play it right now.
Cool.
I'm still working on the music for that, so there's some temp music that they currently have in the game. But yeah, that's a sort of completely different thing to Virginia. It's very much a sort of family adventure style orchestration, so it was quite a good palette changer actually for me.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. If people want to keep track of what you have going on, is there any social media page they can follow?
Yeah, I've got Twitter. I don't post that much on it, but I may post stuff which is to do with some of the projects I'm working on. So it's just at Lyndon Holland.
All right. Well, that's pretty simple. You got there first.
Yeah, there's not many of us. So.
Well, nicely done. Thanks a lot, Lyndon. I enjoyed the conversation. And for anyone curious, definitely go check out Virginia. It's an amazing soundtrack. It doesn't cost very much money and will only take you, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours to experience. And everyone is going to get something different out of it. So I'd be curious to hear what you think. Anyway, that'll do it for our interview, and we will bring you back to the show.
Welcome to The Big Ones, a look at popular game music and what makes it so loved. This week is all about the revolutionary Nintendo 64 game, Super Mario 64. Few games have been as wholly influential as Super Mario 64. This 1996 classic launched with the Nintendo 64 and flung the Mario franchise into the third dimension. But unlike so many other games trying to make their way into the 3D landscape, Super Mario 64 gave an incredible sense of control and freedom that's still fun to play today, even if you didn't grow up playing the game. The game is certainly limited by the Nintendo 64's cartridges, which held much less data than the CDs that Sony was using for the rival PlayStation system. PlayStation games had full motion video cutscenes and recorded music in many of their games, something that the Nintendo 64 could only do in a very limited capacity. However, the music in Super Mario 64 showed just what could be done in those limitations, building on previous Mario titles and using the N64 strengths to deliver a unique soundtrack that's still remembered and iterated upon today. I'll be straight up front though, the virtual instruments in Super Mario 64 aren't great. In fact, I think the instruments for Yoshi's Island for the Super Nintendo are superior. However, like most media with fake-sounding instruments, once you listen through several of the tracks, and especially after playing the game, all you'll hear is the excellence of the compositions. So if you haven't played the game, just bear with it, and try to play the game, it's well worth it. Like all mainline Mario games up to this point, Koshi Kondo composed the music. This was the last Mario game where he was the sole composer, and he doesn't pull any punches. Like all the previous Mario games, almost every track has a singable melody that you never get tired of. Inarguably, the main theme of the game is Bob on Battlefield. This track is right up there with the Super Mario World theme and the original Super Mario Bros. Theme in terms of simplicity, singability, and playability. In fact, the song has not only been remixed by dozens of fans over the years, but it's remixed within the game itself. The slider theme is just a more frantic version. And Snow Mountain is a more wintertime, Christmassy rendition. This is probably the longest lasting tune from the game, but my favorite theme introduced is Bowser's theme. You hear this from the very beginning when Bowser tells you that he's captured the princess. Then you hear it when fighting Bowser in each of his stages. Then in the final showdown, you get an excellent solo organ version called Ultimate Koopa. I love it any time that I hear Baroque-inspired music presented completely unironically in games. Super Mario 64 also features several covers of older Mario themes. Many of the tracks from the original Super Mario Brothers are covered at some point in the game. The first theme you hear after the
"It's me, Mario!"
is a fun, almost drum and bass remix of the overworld theme. Complete with a steel drum, which is almost the instrument of choice for Mario themes. When you get the Wing, Vanish, and Metal Caps, you hear remixes of the Starman theme. Although note, the remix with the Wing or Vanish Cap has the same melody as the Starman theme from Yoshi's Island. When you save Princess Peach at the very end of the game, then you hear the ending theme. But my favorite remix is Cave Dungeon, which is a remix of the underground theme. So relaxing and feels like a cave, with echoing vocal samples and a bass line that sounds like water dripping. While the N64 had severe limitations in terms of instruments and sound quality, the additional processing power and the 3D environments allowed for dynamic music in a serious way. This existed in previous Mario games, such as the additional percussion when you ride Yoshi in Super Mario World, but 64 took it to a new level. The best example of this is the Dire Dire Docks music that plays in every water level of the game. Let's look at its usage in Jolly Roger Bay. There are three layers to the song. The bass layer is ethereal and watery, for lack of a better word. In Jolly Roger Bay, this plays at the very beginning of the level, when you're on a beach looking at the water. And then, when you jump into the water, a layer of strings comes in. This adds a nice counterpoint to enhance the texture of the track. Then, when you go through a tunnel to another area of the level, these drums come in. It completely changes the feeling of the track with just a simple layer of percussion. A more straightforward example of dynamic music is Piranha Plant's Lullaby. When you see piranha plants and sneak up on them, the frantic music of the stage fades down and you hear a pleasant and simple lullaby. This is one of the most beautiful songs from the game, but it has a relatively minor part in the game as a whole. The dynamic music is somewhat simple in this game, but it sets the stage for future games to expand on. See my Banjo-Kazooie episode. Super Mario 64 turns 20 this year, and it deserves to be recognized. It was one of the games that got me into games. It might have been the first game that I played and beat by myself, and will always have a special place in my heart. And the music is integral, as 3D was new and kind of scary for some people, but Koji Kondo's compositions feel like they've always existed. This instant familiarity set the 1996 players at ease and ensured that they would still be talking about it two decades later. Thanks for listening, and listen well.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. I just need to say that when we were starting the outro, I asked Brian to bring us in, and he started to say, what a show, which everyone knows is my go-to catchphrase, so I'm upset.
So, Steven, what did you think of this show?
What a show. What a show it was, Brian.
I think that is, you know, it's a good thing to say because it's inherently accurate. Like, it's exactly. Always going to be accurate.
You can't go wrong.
It's a tautology, so hey.
Regardless, it was a good show. I greatly enjoyed it. Big time thanks to Lyndon for talking about Virginia the day after I played it. It was quite a good experience.
Yeah, that's super cool. And thanks again to Matthew for putting together the big ones.
Mm-hmm. We got all this pulled together at the last second, even though we had 2 weeks.
A special thanks once again to Sin for writing all of those remix rewinds.
Yes, as bad as we are at reading them, I think they still come across quite well. But anyway, if you want to learn more about OC Remix and the show too, you can go to www.ocremix.org and check out the forums.
You can also follow us on Twitter at OCR Podcast.
Don't forget about this one. You can email us at podcast@ocremix.org. And if you like the show, or if you're just, you know, you forgot about it and want to review it on iTunes again because you remembered, that would be great. We really like that.
Absolutely. And speaking of listener feedback, let's jump into this week's playlist. The playlist is a weekly collection of listener-submitted recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme is fighting game music. Blue Water, Blue Sky from Guilty Gear XX and submitted by Sin.
The main theme from One Must Fall 2097, submitted by Aino.
Yuka's theme from Super Variable Geo and submitted by the MDisc Playlist Podcast.
the main theme, classic version, from Marvel vs. Capcom 3, and submitted by Square Evil.
Glass Joe from Punch-Out and submitted by Kyle JCRB.
At My Feet, from East vs. Sora no Kiseki, Alternative Saga, and submitted by Zachary. Ibuki's theme from Street Fighter V and submitted by Caleb. Belief from the King of Fighters 4 and submitted by Carlos.
Like a Dragon from Persona 4 Arena and submitted by Phoenix Down.
Listening to the Overclocked Podcast. Next week's playlist is Fall Music. Autumn is well upon us. How would you sonically express this changing of seasons? To submit your own suggestions,
or just say howdy,
hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast, email us at podcast@ocremix.org, or visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. This week's lyrical wisdom:
punch out, by his master hands you'll be knocked out before you get a chance to see. Lights out, your face is history. Punch out.